Welcome to Chamber Talk with North Orange County Chamber. I'm Andrew Gregson, and our special guest today is Ferrell Hirsch from the Muckenthaler. Welcome, Ferrell.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is fun. I don't get to the chamber offices very often.
You don't. That's very true. And we're going to be possibly moving soon. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that.
Great.
So Ferrell, just quick introduction. Knowing a little bit about who you are, the journey of how you ended up becoming the CEO of the Muck, and share a little bit about why you decided to go in such that type of leadership role with the arts and cultural sector.
Sure. It's an interesting story because this was not the destination. This is not where I thought I would end up. It's not what I thought I'd be doing. I moved out from New York to Southern California in 1987, which was not recent. And I was a sitcom writer. I wrote for television. And that was going well, and I would work. And then I was a petulant little child. And they were paying me all this money to work on TV. And I would say, but you're changing my words. None of my words were getting on the air because there were so many people between me and the screen.
Wow.
And I was dating a girl who said, well, you should write for the theater. In the theater, the playwright's in charge. So I said, okay, I'll write you a play. And by the time I finished writing it, she was long gone. But I did, and I wrote this play, and it ended up playing in Lincoln Center in New York. It toured the country. It was a relative hit. It was called Different States. And so I became a playwright. And then, I was a playwright and I had plays running all over the place. And I would get very frustrated because the plays would be hits. They'd be sold out. And they'd say, oh, we have to close it. We're losing money. I said, how could you lose money if we're sold out? I can do that better than you. So I became a producer, and I produced award shows, televised national award shows, and I was still doing my theater stuff, and I started producing theater, and it started to go really well until one day my wife said, it's time to start a family. You're home one day a week. You're on the road the whole time. Mm-hmm. You can't start a family like that. So I got a radio job, and I became the vice president at Sirius XM, satellite radio.
Right.
Now I shortened that story. Because it was XM, and then it was Sirius, and it was Sirius.
That's right.
XM,
I remember going through that.
Yeah. And then I did that for about 15 years, and I retired. And I'm telling you, 2 weeks after I retired, I get a call from a headhunter and said, would you like to work down in Fullerton? It's a not-for-profit. I said, no, I'm retired. And they said, but, it's right up your alley, and it's a not-for-profit. I said, I've never worked at a not-for-profit in my life. And the woman says, well, it says here that you run a not-for-profit. And you just raised $200,000. I said, no. I'm not really running a not-for-profit. I'm president of the school board at my daughter's elementary school. I was just talking rich people into paying money for their own kids.
Right.
And she said, but it's there's a theater Broadway guy and there's theater. I said, no, I was a producer. The Muck is a presenter. And she said, well, just come down and meet them. I met them and I fell in love. I'd never been in Fullerton before. I didn't know this place. It's special.
And where were you living then?
Well, I still live on the west side of L.A.
Oh, right. So yeah. Then you're in the school district for one in L.A. then?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
My daughter's now a high school senior.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. And who knows? Maybe Cal State Fullerton.
You're looking good for the age then, Ferrell.
Oh, I'm old. I don't mind saying it. I turned 60 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And that's old.
Yeah.
So that's the story of how I got here. But I really just came down for the interview because they said they would buy lunch. when you're retired, you think like that. But that place is special. I mean, Fullerton itself is special.
Yeah.
But the people who come through the door are the nicest, sweetest. It's hard to imagine that much goodwill at any one place.
Yeah. It is an amazing place, isn't it? Now, talking about the place, let's go through a few things that you offer there, because there's lots of different things people can do, can't they, if they've never actually been to the Muck? So you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the only way to say it in a sentence is that whatever artistic dreams or talents or desires you have, we can fulfill them at the Muck. So most people know us here in town because we have this gorgeous concert stage, and we're bringing literally the winners of hundreds of Grammy Awards every year. A couple of months ago, I should say, Poncho Sanchez, internationally famous Latin jazz performer, he was the headliner of our jazz festival. Wow. 2 days later, 2 days later, He headlined the Jazz Festival of the Hollywood Bowl. That's a big deal. We had the same headliner.
Right.
We had this guy named Sean, his kid. He's young. He's 21, 22, local guy. Sean Oliu, country singer. Played the Grand Ole Opry, got a standing ovation. A week later, played the Muck.
Wow.
So those are the kind of things we bring just on our stage.
Right.
Also, a lot of people know us for our car show. We've had a car show for 28 years.
Right.
And it's the longest running and most prestigious car show in this region. So we're really proud of that. We have classes and camps and not just camps. We have a summer camp anybody can send their kid to. We have a second one for kids on the autism spectrum. We also run arts programming for kids who are visually impaired. We run arts programming for people who are suffering with PTSD. We have a special one on top of that for military veterans. We have a program just for people on parole. We take over whole school districts. Like here in Fullerton, you don't need us in the elementary schools. We're in the high schools and the middle schools, but the elementary schools have a great organization called All the Arts for All the Kids.
Right.
The same service they do here in Fullerton, we do in three other school districts. Wow. Yeah, and so, again, people in Fullerton don't necessarily know that aspect
would you?
Of what we do.
Right.
We're in every library in Anaheim. We'd come to the Fullerton libraries if they were willing to engage us, and that specifically means monetarily.
Right.
Because it has to be paid for.
It has to be paid for, that's right.
And we're in prisons. We're in, at any given time, 8 to 10 different prisons in Southern California bringing arts. When I say we bring the arts to anywhere it's needed, anywhere it's absent, whatever it is. So if you, again, we have the, on top of all that, we have the finest ceramics facility in Orange County. If you want to know, we have 4 master artists teaching 4 different kinds of ceramics.
Wow.
And that's great. Plus, we have an art gallery. I got a Salvador Dali show coming in 2024. Who else is bringing Salvador Dali shows to Fullerton?
Yeah.
It's us.
Yeah, or even Orange County, or even Southern California.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? So how do you, you know, as... That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot. That's a lot of hats and a lot of goings on. Where do you find your inspiration to who to bring in and what you feel would be right at the time and things like that? Because that's a heavy responsibility.
Right. Well, everything gets informed by our mission statement. And the mission statement comes to us from the Muckenthaler family, who donated this, the building and the mansion, we call it, and the surrounding 9 acres. And they decided that this organization's mission would be to enrich the human spirit through the arts. So we judge everything by that criteria.
Right.
Is what we're doing enriching the human spirit through the arts? So, for instance, we run trips out of the country. We're going to Ireland in October.
Wow.
Next year, we're taking people to Greece. But we're not going to Greece to hang out on the beach at Ibiza. We're not doing those bubble shows. Okay, I'm not bringing, for those of you who are listening and are constituents, I'm not going to make you go to the beach and sit in the bubble. We're going to visit the Acropolis and the Parthenon and the Schmopopolis and the whatever-thon. I am not...
All the big statues that fell in the water all the other things, right.
We're going to experience the art and the food and the culture. And those are the kind of trips we run. We had a great one to Nashville a few years ago. We did a riverboat cruise through France up the Seine, and we ended at the at Normandy at the cemetery for American soldiers. And we visited Toulouse-Lautrec. I mean, these trips they have to be informed by that mission statement.
Right.
So, again, that's it. Does it enrich the human spirit through the arts?
Right. I love your track thinking there, because often at times, the chamber has similar types of it has the bylaws and it has its mission statement. And we have a book in our archives that was written in 1893 when, people dressed like, Wyatt Earp were wandering around and they wrote these things down. And sometimes it's really good, if you can't really focus on where you're going, go back to that statement, read it over and go, oh, we'll just make it more easy. I'll go back to that. And it sets you back on track. So I love that. I love the idea of that. That's really good. So all these things that got going on with the managing of the arts, the different teachings that you do, all the classes that happen outside of the area.
Yeah.
How do you manage all that? That's a lot of...
Well, you know, we're not for profit, but a lot of people out there, maybe people in the chamber, people listening to this, may not realize that even if we are legally a not-for-profit, a 501c3 not-for-profit, and even though our business is the arts, we're still a business.
Mm-hmm.
We have to operate by normal, regular business practices, and the same things that succeed in any other business are what succeeds here. So the first thing, I would say there's only two rules. Now, I have an MBA. I got it during the pandemic because I had to sit in my office all day with nothing to do. I said, why not? Let's get another degree. I went home. I told my wife, hey, I'm getting an MBA. She said, great. You waited just long enough so it couldn't help your earning potential. But there's really only two elements. One is you got to surround yourself with the best people you can.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. I don't. If anybody listening knows my staff, Jeanette is a rock. Adam's a nut, but in the good way. Stephanie Vicuña, who runs our arts education department, is a dynamo. She's just phenomenal. Shireen, who's our director of development. Callie, who's also the co-artistic director of the Electric Company Theater. We have a resident theater company. That's just a great team. And so that's the first thing. First element is surround yourself with the best people you can find.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, again, you're a businessman. Everybody listening is probably in business.
Mm-hmm.
Got to satisfy your customers. Got to make the customer happy.
Yeah.
That's
number one.
Right. So... And again, it gets more complicated. Now, we have to do it through our mission statement, but so does every other company.
Yeah.
Like McDonald's has to do it through hamburgers.
Yeah.
They have to.
Yeah.
If the hamburger doesn't work, McDonald's doesn't work.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, it's really the key is the great staff and listening. So every concert, there's a concert every Thursday night. I'm there at every one.
Wow.
Well, not next week because I'll be in Seattle, but I'll be in Seattle working for the Muck, going to a conference where I try to book next year's acts. But I'm there not just at the top to grab the glory and introduce the band. I'm there at the end, and I ask everybody leaving what they thought of that show.
Right.
And I'll tell you where this comes from. When I worked in radio, I was a radio executive for years, and whenever we had a replay on the air,
mm-hmm.
and the audience doesn't know there's a replay.
Sure.
It's not television where where you could just sort of
or you
put
could
it on
tell
there.
right all the color shirts somebody's
right,
wearing as
right.
well.
Right, you don't know. So the phone banks, call and show phone banks are filled. I would go into the studio and answer the phones, and I would talk to hundreds of people in an hour, and I'd ask them what they thought of the station, what their favorite shows are, why they didn't listen to the other shows. I think it's. Well, I don't want to say it's a mistake other CEOs make. It is, but I don't want to say that because they may be listening. But you got to know what you got to find. It. You may think you don't have time.
No, you got to make time.
Yeah.
It's the best audience. Thing to do.
Yep.
It's the best research you could possibly have because it's how you're going to further yourself.
Yeah. Or else you're in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you're going to try to look at your own work and determine whether you're doing a good job, well, you're biased. You're the guy who already made the decision.
Exactly.
Of course
right.
you think it's the right decision.
Yeah.
You've already made it.
Right, right.
So you gotta figure out what the customers want.
That's very true. Now, I know that you're opening a new education facility, aren't you, in October or something? You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, right around Halloween is the target date. This is a big deal. For those of you who have been to the Muck but haven't been there in the last 6 months, for 30 or 40 years, well, since the mid-70s, I'm not sure I can do the math there. It's almost 50 years, almost a half a century, I guess.
Yeah.
There had been this building that had lived as a shack on a used aircraft, I don't know, I guess used aircraft was here in the area and had a campus.
Okay.
When they didn't need this building anymore, they put it on the back of a truck, carted it over to the Muck, and it was put down on a slab. That building didn't work from the mid-70s on. And as people in this community have said to me, we've been trying to get rid of that building for 30 years. You got to replace it. So I said, great. Let's see if we can do it. And we raised about $2 million. All in, this is going to be a $2 million project. It triples the amount of classroom space we have.
Wow.
But also, it's a beautiful building. The old thing was falling apart. It didn't fit the decor of the mansion. And we're a historical property.
Yeah.
So we're building something that makes sense. We used our architects, Rick Crane and Associates, right here in Fullerton. That was important to us.
He did a great job with the house down the side there, didn't he, for another nonprofit?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they do great work. It's another, you know, pretty local group, PR Construction. They're from Santa Ana, not too far away. Mm-hmm. They're our contractors. And we're not done yet, so I should cross my fingers when I say it. But so far, we're only about 6 weeks from opening. We are on budget and on time. So good news for the contractors. It also means the architects must have done a good job.
Right.
And you know, and then our other partner in this, of course, is the city.
Yeah.
Because legally we're on city land. Right. And the city has the right to make up all kinds of rules and I mean, man, there's a lot of permits.
Yeah.
There's a lot of permits and inspections, and I tried to explain to the city that it's their land. When the building gets built, it enhances the value of their land.
Right.
So it's a weird business operation. The muck is on city property. According to the contract, the city owns the property. The muck owns the house.
Right.
But the city has to do the maintenance on the house. The muck has to do the maintenance on the property. I have no idea who wrote or signed this crazy deal, but we have a really good relationship with the city. Eric Levitt, the new city manager, we got along with the old city managers too, but Eric is just, he understands we're not the enemy, and he's trying everything he can, and I wish everything he can included getting rid of all these. The inspections themselves are important.
Yes,
you
they are.
You want your building to stand.
Yeah, and they need to be safe and all the rest of the stuff. It's just like you say, it's
but the
permit
fees,
after permit after permit and fees.
The fees
yeah.
are as I like to say, the building is going to cost about $1.2, $1.3 million. The project is going to cost almost $2
million. Right, right.
That's not all. I'm not saying there's $800,000 worth of
in fees.
Fees,
right.
Fees.
But it's a big chunk.
Unfair. But
yeah.
There's so many other things. But, you know, I don't want to complain. The city's great to us. Great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And are you going to be doing like a grand opening with this when it's ready? What's your idea about sharing it with the world?
Well, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, we would love the chamber to be involved with. There should be a grand opening. We're going to be in Ireland when the project's done, so we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
Of course,
it'll probably be mid-November.
That's okay.
Because I don't want to miss it.
Of course, you don't.
I've put my heart and soul into this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking mid-November, and we'd like to have like local, because this is the biggest, most elaborate, most state-of-the-art arts facility ever built in Fullerton.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big deal for this community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're going to be working with thousands of people a year in and out of that building.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to celebrate, and we want people. So we'll make a big event out of it. We'll have a band playing. I like the idea of the ribbon cutting with the big scissors.
I think that's really good. And that time of year is good. It's a little cooler. People are okay being outside. Yeah,
we're taping this in August. I guess I'd do it today if I had to. But
yeah, it'd be a little warm.
I'm glad you tape these shows inside. That's all I'm saying. I'm much happier in here.
I wouldn't like to do outside either. Mm-hmm. To go like a lobster. Now, there's also a few other bits and pieces. I know you've got a few art programs coming up toward this year. All year you've had them, but you've got a few more coming up. You want to share a little bit about those?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I'm proudest of, and there's a lot of things, because I've been here about 6.5 years. The art gallery is just astounding. So this year, in 2023, there was a guy named Master Kim who has made these Gorodon, Celadon, giant ceramics pieces. You've never seen anything like it. We had his exhibit. It was so beautiful, it made music play in the background. It was just incredible. We loved this exhibit. And this stuff had never been shown in the United States of America before. But so many people came to see it, and it got such notoriety. It's now doing a trip up the East Coast into different... right now, as we speak, it's at Yale, Yale University Museum. So we're thrilled that we could be a launching pad for those kind of events. And this is the craziest story in the history of the world. We have the Salvador Dali show coming up, and here's how it happened. There's a guy named Ben Feldman who is a retired hedge fund broker. He lives in the hills of West Virginia. That's to where he retired? I guess that's how you'd say it.
All right.
Yeah, because you don't want to end in a preposition, especially when you're talking about Mr. Feldman. So he's this hedge fund guy, and he was playing in a high-stakes poker game one day, and the other guy couldn't cover his bet, couldn't cover his wager. So Ben got this trunk full of stuff that he had no idea what it was, but it's all he could get, and he took it, and he put it in his garage. He looked at it, and he goes, that's a bunch of scribbles. Put it in his garage, and said, whatever. 3 years later, he's just playing on the internet, and he comes across a YouTube footage of a KABC television coverage of a Dali show that we did in 2020, which was we were the only art gallery open in the state of California during that part of the pandemic, which is why they were doing this story.
Wow.
We got special dispensation from the governor's office to be open. And he saw this on YouTube, and he looked at the stuff where he says, wait a minute, that's the same crap I got in my garage. And so he called us, and he's got 48 Salvador Dali pieces that, to the best of our knowledge, have not been shown anywhere at any gallery in, again, at least 50, 60 years.
Wow.
So that's the craziest story. It's just in his trunk. So we made a deal with him, and they're going to come out, and we're looking for other museums to partner with us.
Right.
So we've got this crazy Salvador Dali exhibit, and you think, oh, Farrah, look, the Muck does this world-renowned stuff, and we do.
Right.
But we also do an annual show of the best artwork that comes out of the Fullerton High School District. And again, it's one of the things I always say to the kids, you may or may not think you're a serious artist, but your art is sharing the walls, same walls that a month from now are going to have Salvador Dali's work on it. And in the past have had Jeffrey Koons and Jasper Johns and Rauschenberg and Andy Warhol and Annie Leibovitz. All these people have... most of that is not during my time, to be fair. But all those great world-renowned artists have had their work shown at the Muck.
Right.
That's
pretty amazing, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming there's a lot of work going into, because you said it's in a trunk, right? So he's got to pull it out, dust it off.
Yes,
Is there a lot of work that goes into preparing a room? Like, did you have to special air conditioning, things like that, when you're doing art pieces that have great value?
That would be great. here's the thing. You do have to watch the temperature and the moisture.
Right.
Absolutely. That is paramount. Whether you have, you know, $1 million pieces or $20 pieces, you have a stewardship, and you want to make sure you're handing them back to the artist when you're done, or in this case, the collector.
Right.
So we do that, and we have to have... and the numbers differ depending on what show we're bringing in, but there are really specific needs about how much insurance we have to cover and what security needs or what the baseline of security is. Yeah, you got to have that.
Right.
Now, the thing about Salvador Dali's, it's a little bit deceptive, because I don't want to get into the weeds of the art world here, but Dali worked a lot with prints. So there was no one painting of a lot of his work. He would make something and he'd make 25 copies or 50 copies or 150 copies of it. So even though he's Salvador Dali, a lot of the works are $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000. There's not going to be any work that would really, in our gallery, that's going to be on the market at $5 million or $15 million. That's not this show.
Right. And
sorry, got to be honest.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And I'm assuming you don't need to get permits for hanging certain arts, do you? Or does that lead into other?
No, the only permits we really have to get We are a historical property.
Right.
So, and we're nailing things into the wall on a historic property. But that's sort of a permanent, I guess you'd call it an easement that we've got. So that's
okay.
Yes.
Right.
Let's see. Well, you know, we do have ongoing permits. Let's say opening night, we want to have alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, all our opening nights are catered by Colette's Catering. And I should mention Colette's.
You know, they're good food.
It's phenomenal. They just catered our annual gala last week. They're going to cater our quinceañera. You know, we do this quinceañera for families that want to continue that tradition, that Mexican tradition, and don't have the wherewithal to do it themselves. They can come to us, and we throw a quinceañera for 200 or 300 people. And, and Colette's Catering, good corporate citizens. They're not just great presenters and makers of food. They're good corporate citizens, and they partner with us and a lot of other organizations in town, with the Y and Crittenden and all these other, and they're sending us the girls, and it's an amazing, amazing evening. So I just wanted to mention that. But when Colette does catering for us, or they have a bar, we have to get alcohol permits for, and we probably do 100 events a year.
Right.
That doesn't even include the events that Colette does, which are weddings and
Bits and pieces out there.
Yeah, so they'll do 100 weddings a year.
So you were mentioning a little bit before, well, at the very beginning of our conversation, you were quite rightly so talking about figuring out what your customers like, because that makes them, or your listeners, you were talking about the radio station, and because that's how you run your business, right?
Yeah.
And the chamber, we have members. That's where we get the majority of our members. And if we don't have members, we don't have revenue to do things.
Right.
So how do you make that up? What happens at the mat?
Well, I can certainly tell you about revenue.
Right.
And we're, again, as a not-for-profit, this is public information. It all has to be posted. You can... Do you know that we're a not-for-profit, so legal... Well, you know this, because you probably are. People can just knock on the door and demand your financial information.
Can I have it, please? Yep, there you go.
Yeah, it's a little strange, but... Because I'm usually... By nature, I'm a little more private. But... the number one source of income for us, and it's probably about 30%, is I guess you'd call it rental fees or location fees. So that's anything from our friends at Colette's booking weddings or celebrations of life. Also, if a movie is shot, I mean, that's pretty lucrative. We can be a filming location for people. So location fees are our number one source of income. Our second biggest source of income is probably, well, it depends how you, I would say it's our education department.
Okay.
The education department is huge. It's just tremendous. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but a lot of that money is grant money. Grants are misleading if you're not in the not-for-profit industry, especially with us. Most of the grants we get are what you call programmatic grants. So if some organization gives us $100,000, it's so that we can spend $90,000 of it on a very specific program.
Right.
We're not really making $100,000.
No.
You know, we just make a little administrative fee off the
mm-hmm,
top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's what we do. So our education department is our second biggest source of income. The third biggest source of income is our donors. And the donors come, I would say donors and sponsors. So there's a lot of local organizations and companies that are our donors. People like Farmers and Merchants Bank.
Right.
Like Chevron. I don't know if you know Oakmont. It's a memory care facility over here on Bass and Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
They're a big sponsor for us. Actually, Colette's is PR Construction is one of our big sponsors. So we have a lot of local sponsorship.
Right.
And if they're and again, when they're throwing in $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever they're throwing in, they become a constituency unto themselves.
Right.
And then there are individuals in our community, and I don't know how many of them want me to mention their names, but there are people that you and I have lunch with once a week.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I know. I do know.
Yeah. Yes. And they're writing us. I mean, there's in my 6 years here, I would say there's at least 15 to 20 individuals who have given, you know, six figures over that time.
Yeah.
And I can think of three different individuals who have written six figure, just a single six figure check.
Wow.
One is right down the block here. I don't know if you know Craig Walker. Mm-hmm. He's a financial manager from down the block. He has, I don't want to say, he has arranged for several of the people he works with to give us big, giant checks. So Craig, he manages our endowment. So again, our endowment has doubled in the time I'm here. So we're, for the first time, our endowment's over $1 million. And it's not because I'm here, it's because Craig is managing that.
Right, that's fantastic news. Yep. That's great. Now, if anybody wants to find out more about this, what's the process? Is there a certain office they call? Is it literally get a hold of you? What should they do?
Yeah, the easiest thing is just themuck.org. Themuck.org. And you don't have to spell it Muckenthaler. Nobody's going to get that. You can just themuck.org. And you could probably find all this information there about not just everything I said, but also the history. You could find the Muckenthaler family history up there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll give you 2 seconds of that because it becomes relevant. They came out here, the Muckenthaler family emigrated here from a tiny town of Paxico, Kansas. And they always told the story of how they came over in these covered wagons. And there's a relief over one of the fireplaces in the mansion of these covered wagons. But here's the truth, because I was just in Paxico, Kansas recently. They came out by train. I mean, you know, it wasn't covered wagon. That's the romantic family myth.
Well, maybe they had to go in the covered wagon from the house to the train station.
The house was 50 feet from the train station. I've got pictures of myself on the front porch of that Muckenthaler house and at that train station in Paxico, Kansas. But the reason I was there was because the city is the wrong
term.
Yeah. There's 120-something people in the town.
All right. The village.
But they've commissioned a mural to be made of the Muckenthaler family leaving, not because they wanted them out,
but because
they went on and did such great things, just basically
great things
here in Fullerton.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they asked us for help finding a muralist, which we did.
Right.
And so I was out there to sort of launch the project, and I'll be back within the next few months to see the mural of the Muckenthaler family out.
And what do you think made them? Why Fullerton? Was it because the train station brought you here?
It was probably a combination of two things. they didn't. I think what Walter specifically, Walter Muckenthaler, who is our patriarch, I think he wanted land, mm-hmm. and he wanted to have groves, and this was the place.
This is the place then.
In the, you know, the beginning of the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
and they were citrus growers,
mm-hmm.
kind of.
Right.
And here's a real Chamber of Commerce kind of story. Walter made a lot of money growing almost exclusively avocados and walnuts. He was, I think, the second or third biggest walnut farm or grower or grove in America.
Mm.
But the local group that he really wanted to lead, because they were the biggest lobby in town, was the Orange County Citrus Growers Association.
Mm-hmm.
So he planted 4 orange trees and 2 lemon trees at first, and that expanded. But he just planted a couple of trees so he could run the citrus grower, and he became not only the president of the Citrus Growers Foundation, but the first Catholic mayor of Fullerton.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, so there's some...
That's good history, though, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some Fullerton.
And what year was that they first came over here, Farrell? Do you remember?
It was, they came over in the teens. The house was... Well, they started building the house in 24, and the house was completed, and they moved back in 25.
Right.
So we are coming up on that centennial.
Yeah, no, I think about it, because so the chamber was, it was formed in 1893.
Wow.
The city was 1890, I think, is when the stake was driven in the ground at the bottom of Harbour and Commonwealth.
Is that the Ambridge Brothers?
It's Fullerton. Yeah. There you go. So, you know, if you think about it, and in 1893, the chamber was originally called Orange Chamber.
Yeah.
Period, because it was Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to receive, they were the commas, because they used to even receive telegrams from Irvine Company, when Irvine Company were farmers, telling you what the crop growth was and what's going on the train, where it's going. It's fascinating information we've got here.
I'm sure Walter was a member.
How great.
I'm sure
100%. In fact, if we probably go back, one of them might have even been a president. Chairs now, but it was a president back in the day. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But it's funny, the history, though, how much Fullerton grew in a time when we had basically nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then now suddenly we're at this, well, where are we going now? You know, what's the next leap? You know, that's the next bit part.
I'll sit on a panel, but don't leave me here trying to figure out the next 100 years, because I don't know if everybody would want to follow my plan for the next 100 years. And we won't go into it, but I got some pretty... Oh, no, you heard some of my crazy ideas yesterday.
Yes,
we had lunch yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not putting those out.
I don't think they were crazy, though. I think, you know, that's the thing. It's sometimes you got to have a thought.
Yeah.
You got to think it through, and then sometimes, you know what, actually, it might make sense, but you're right, it doesn't really sit here today.
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in the wisdom of the crowd.
Right.
So I can come up with my crazy idea, but it's a bad idea to just let me run with it. either put people on a panel, on a commission, let people vote.
Don't let them out the biscuit tin.
Yeah.
So you're preparing for the 2025 centennial.
Yes.
I'm assuming. What plans or ideas have you? Oh, well, ideas could be here all day. But.
Well, right. Well, there's going to be a couple of things. So we have a concert scheduled where we're going to do. Because I think this is fun, like the greatest songs in the history of Fullerton.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Because, again, Jackson Browne is from here, and Three Dog Night is from here. And as a punk band, I'm not sure how many Chamber members are big punk fans, but Social Disorder was formed here.
Right.
And we have bands here now. You know what? Gwen Stefani was from down the block. We'll cheat.
This is a very, like, you know, arty city.
And if you, John Raitt, the great Broadway tenor, lived in Fullerton and grew up in Fullerton, and we can include some of his big Broadway hits. And, you know, why not? Bonnie Raitt's his daughter. We'll throw a couple of Bonnie Raitt songs in, whether she lived here or not. So we're going to do a countdown of the greatest songs in the history of Fullerton. You know, songs that were connected to here.
That's cool.
So that's a really cool thing. We're going to do two international trips that year. And that we're going to include a trip back to, we're going to retrace the Muckenthaler steps back to Paxico, Kansas. And we're going to try to arrange it so we could be there and bring a group from Fullerton to the opening of, or the unveiling of that mural.
That'll be amazing,
that
wouldn't it?
That is a really, really cool
That is
thing.
Pretty amazing. I'm assuming you're not going in a canvas wagon either.
No. There are people who are asking us to do it by train. I recently traveled by train to Northern California, but I didn't. I loved it. That is a great way to travel. I liked it better than airplane travel.
A lot of people have been saying that. It's been on the internet a lot recently.
But I don't know how I'd feel if I stayed overnight in. I guess there's communal showers and.
I don't know. I wouldn't.
I haven't done that. So, really, like I said before, it's up to the audience.
Yeah.
I mean. I can offer the trip both ways.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people could head out on Monday by train. The other people could take off by plane right. on Wednesday.
Meet each other,
and have two different groups go.
Yeah.
By the way, all our travel is run by a company called Meridian Guided Travel right here in Fullerton. Again,
oh wow, that's cool.
I bet he's not. The guy's name is Matt Maturo. I bet he's not a member of the chamber, but he would be. We should talk to him.
We should talk to him. I like that. That's good. That's great. Thank you very much. You were talking very earlier on about, you'd mentioned that you did script writing, then you went into theatre writing, and how well some of them actually really went out, and you were very, very happy with them. You were very pleased with them,
right?
Those
are the ones I talk about.
have you ever thought about running them at the Muck?
Here's the thing. We have a resident theatre company, again, based here in Fullerton, the Electric Company Theatre, and they do great, ambitious, fun work. They just did a Sound of Music that was all over the property. They got the Tony Award winning show Once, which is a musical that they're going to do in a site specific way inside our gallery that's coming up this fall. They're coming back early in 2024 with Fiddler on the Roof.
No, that's a good
They're going to build the town of Anatevka on our lawn.
Wow.
Now, for anybody who knows Anatevka, okay, I think it's their thing, but I think anybody who comes to see it is really going to be playing the part of a villager in Anatevka, in this shtetl, in the Pale of Settlement. I got my first master's in history, so I got...
The only thing I remember from that, from watching it over and over again, because my mother was into all of that, was If I Was a Rich Man.
Yeah, which, again, covered by Gwen Stefani, who grew up down the block, and we're going to... Maybe that's the song we'll do at our centennial thing. So there's one show that I've thought of. It's called The Last Bear, and I wrote it because I saw an article in the New York Times about the last animal that was left alive in the zoo at Sarajevo when the war broke out in the Balkans. And there was one animal left alive. It was a Russian black bear that was a gift from Stalin to Tito.
Wow.
And it was only alive because it ate the other two bears in its cell. And those two bears that it ate were its own... That bear ate its own parents.
Right.
And, you know, because... There was a war. Nobody came along to
feed him. Right. They were gone. Right.
So I wrote a one-man play where the guy gets to play that bear.
Wow.
And it's, despite the fact that it's a horribly, I mean, it's a war and it's cannibalism.
Sure.
It's really, really funny.
Right.
That play ran for me. It ran at the Royal National Theater. Sir Trevor Nunn, if you're a theater guy from your hometown, Sir Trevor Nunn is a big deal. He directed it. We ran it on national TV in Sweden. Another company did it. It played in Stockholm, Helsinki, and Oslo. The next year, it went to Johannesburg and Sydney. And so that play has been really, really successful. And I thought maybe we'd do that as a fundraiser one time.
That'd be cool, especially because you're running the place. That would, you know.
I know, but
are you worried that locals wouldn't come because they don't like you that much? Or?
No, I think we could get a good crowd, but I never... I like to be really, really careful about using the muck as a way to promote my own nonsense. And it's not nonsense.
Well,
it's
not if it's a fundraiser, though, because you're sort of giving the rights to air it, you know?
Yeah, so I wrote a book that came out in 2018, and it made the bestsellers list.
Oh, well, congratulations. What's the book called?
It's not PG. The title's not PG rated.
Okay? Oh, okay.
I'll clean it up.
Yeah.
It's called 50 Things I Learned by Screwing Up in Front of Celebrities.
All right, okay. And can you find it on Amazon or something?
Absolutely, it's on Amazon if you get my name. It's my shoving match with Leonard Nimoy, the time Frank Sinatra sued me. It's backstage with Annette Bening and Carol Burnett. And it's all these, you know, it's the time Justin Bieber crashed my birthday party. It's the time I told Lady Gaga that she's going to have to change her name or she'll never make it in this business. It's the day my daughter was born, and Gwen Stefani and Gavin were giving birth in the next room over. And was
wow.
So, but it's really, really is stories of me screwing up.
Right.
I figured I may write one book in my life, and I don't want to put it out into the universe. Like, I don't want to out anybody. I don't want to call anybody a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
I made an exception for Bill Cosby. Because... He's gotten himself into some trouble.
There's nothing
I could say that's going to ruin Cosby's reputation.
No.
But there's great stories. I worked really closely with Hugh Hefner for many years. So there's all these great stories, and in every story, I'm the guy who messes up.
It's a story of what I learned. Right. That's cool.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
I'm going to look for that.
I'm not going to promise great literature.
No.
I promise you'll get a couple of laughs out of it.
I'm not a great book reader, but you know, something like that would make me sit down and I'd want to read that. Yes. I like that.
A lot of people tell me exactly where they sat down and what chapter they read and how hard they flushed when they were done.
That's pretty cool.
That's where a lot of people do this. That's right. Hey, I wrote it.
Buy my book. It's okay. I'm good.
I get 20% of the gross, no matter where you read it.
Exactly.
Even if it's gross.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've done a lot of plans here, but you know, we've talked about your family. We haven't really, you know, as you say, you're private. I know you're very proud of your daughter and everything she does, and your wife's in public office or has been in public office.
Yeah, she was an elected official up in LA for about 6 years.
I very vaguely remember when I first started here, I watched a video, and it was when you were new at the Muck, and you were talking about, oh, maybe I'll move to Fullerton. I don't know what it is. Have you got plans? You know, discuss things, what you might do in the future?
Well, and this happens for a lot of families. here's the thing. My daughter, when I came down here, my daughter, I think, was 12.
Right.
And makes sense. And she was thriving. She had, let me tell you, the grades were good and the extracurriculars were good, but she had this group of friends. It still has this group of friends. These are the kids that a parent wants their children to hang out. If I had to pick friends for her,
they would have been them.
Yes.
Wow, that's cool.
And all, I mean, ambitious and smart and good-hearted. We never had in our house all that. You hear that mean girl stuff that goes on, and we never heard any of the. Maybe my daughter was just a bully. That's why. But no, she's not. If you met her, you'd know she's not. But we never had that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm of two minds. One is that, you know, kids are indestructible. You can move a kid. Kids can handle that. They can.
Yeah. But you don't want to ruin that, right, do you?
On the other hand, kids are so fragile that anything can destroy them. Both things are true.
That's very true. That's very
and
true.
And if things are going well, I'd rather drive an hour each way every day. When you decide you're going to be a parent, you make that commitment.
Yes.
I grew up in New York. Everybody's dad, and those days it wasn't the moms. Mm-hmm. Everybody's dad got on the train and went into the city for an hour and then took an hour back because that's how you provide for your family.
Right.
So I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll drive and I take Fridays off, so it's okay.
Yeah. No, so I get it. I like that. Day. I like that idea. In fact, something I want to, from yesterday, we're talking, and one thing that really resonated with me, and we didn't really have time to say anything, but and I'm quite open about sharing it on air, is that I was like mightily impressed with a short tale about when you and your wife were having a discussion about maybe going into public office, and you said, you should do it. We have a daughter, and you should do it. And I just thought, that is the type of parents that I think, wow, that's just amazing. So good on you for that.
Thank
that was
you.
Awesome.
I'm of all the things I've done in my life, I am most proud of my parenting. My daughter is, if you're going to judge, you're going to judge a parent by the results. then I've won this game.
Yeah, right.
I'm a pretty good husband. I'm a good boss. I think I'm doing a good job at the muck. But the most important job that I've ever had is the one that I'm most proud of. I really do think I've done this really well.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's good. That's good for you. Good
yeah.
for you. And why move? Yeah. So have you ever thought, you guys, at this stage where you're thinking universities or what's happening in the future?
So starting in 2020, when the pandemic hit, my daughter and I have at least once a month gone to visit college. So it's 3 years of going. We've probably seen 200 different colleges.
Really?
Yeah. But she wants New York. She doesn't care what school she goes to or what she majored. Well, she wants to major. She knows she wants to be in the arts.
Right.
She doesn't necessarily want to be an artist. Maybe it's like this past summer, she interned with two film companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so she thinks maybe she'll go to film school. But last summer, she interned at an art museum with the curator, and she thought she wanted to be a curator.
Okay, fair enough.
So she doesn't know exactly what she wants to
do.
But she knows she wants to be somewhere in the arts.
Okay.
And she thinks New York is the best place for that. And so, you know, she just started her senior year. Just getting through she's made her list of schools. We're going to start applying. We'll apply like everybody else. You apply to 30, 40 schools, including the ones you know you can't afford.
Right.
And you hope for a miracle.
Yeah.
The miracle would be that she doesn't get in, so you don't have to pay. No. No. Her. I don't want to say. It's her dream. I don't want to give away her stuff. But she has a school she really wants most to go to.
Right.
And another dozen that she'd be thrilled with.
And do you still have family up in New York? Or
My brother and his wife raised their three kids on the what would that be? That would be Upper East Side.
And do you think coming from somewhere where you've got all seasons and living in wonderful California, do you think you'd ever move out of California to go back to that type of weather, or are you spoiled?
I did. I was working for Sirius XM and they offered me what I thought was my dream job in 2013. So my wife and my daughter stayed in California because it was the middle of the school year.
Mm.
And I moved to New York and worked at Sirius XM at 1221 Avenue of the Americas, right, you know, Rockefeller Center, basically. And I worked there that whole summer. And we would have moved back. Absolutely would have moved back. There were some issues. I end up not liking the job as much as I thought. I thought it was my dream job because I was moving up in the kind of stations that I was getting to launch.
Right.
And I got to, you know, I got to work on stations like Comedy Central.
Wow.
I mean, I launched Comedy Central as a radio station.
Right,
I
right.
TV.
Yeah, yeah.
I ran the only LGBTQ station in the radio station in the world.
Wow.
And those were big steps up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love New York. But after a couple of months, it became obvious that
wasn't right fit.
It went right. So yeah. I called my wife and said, "Take the house off the market. I'm coming home."
Okay.
And I got them to transfer me back to my old job in Los Angeles.
Well, that's awesome.
Basically.
Well, Ferrell, it's been an absolute pleasure and a blast. Thank you very much for
coming
today.
No, thank you. This is fun.
I apologize to the audience. I've got a bit of a raspy voice today, so it probably is a little irritating in the ear, so I'm sorry.
It'll be better when we record part two tomorrow.
I'll just see. Anyway, so thank you very much for attending. But just before we finish this episode, is there anything you'd like to leave for the listeners? Words of wisdom? Buy my book, have a laugh, whatever it is.
Oh, well, if you want to buy the book. But that's not, this isn't that sort of commercial. You know what? Here's the thing about the muck that I would say. People who show up a lot always say, "Oh, you know, you're like our hidden gem." We're not hidden.
Yeah.
We're out there. We're running television commercials. We're in the newspapers. Almost every concert we do sells out. Our classes sell out. Our camps sell out.
There's big signs on the street showing where you are.
Yeah. So we're not hiding. If you haven't been there yet, come see us. We'll welcome you with open arms. Even if it's just to walk around the 9 acres of a beautiful campus and see a 100-year-old house, come visit us, because I know once you come, you'll be coming back all the time.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ferrell, for coming in today. Really appreciate your time. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And we hope you'll visit nocchamber.com and select Sign Up for News at the top of the page to join our mailing list. For more interviews, visit chambertalk.podbean.com. And we invite you to like, follow, share Chamber Talk.